Hello and welcome along to the RT Rugby Podcast. We are back after a week off. Couldn't be helped, but we'll be right with you through to the end of the British and Irish Lions Test Series at the very least. Eddie O'Sullivan is on the other end of the line this week and loads to get through. Eddie, the Lions named their team for Saturday's game against an Australian and New Zealand 15 in Adelaide, final game before the Test Series. And Ireland also named their team this morning for the second and final game of their summer series. This is against Portugal on Saturday night. Five changes and three potential debuts. Shane Bolton, Alex Kendellan and Hugh Gavin, those who are set to earn their first caps this weekend. We'll start with the Lions though, Eddie. Tadhg Byrne captains the team this week, very much keeping probably the test side on ice for the most part. Hugo Keenan starts at full back. There's no major news at the moment as well on Blair Kinghorn after his knee injury yesterday. He's getting a scan. It's still very much in the wait and see mode, but maybe promising to see that no one has been called up just yet, particularly with a test game around the corner. Owen Farrell also on the bench. To run through that team for those listening, Hugo Keenan's at fullback, Mac Hansen and Duane van der Merwe on the wings. It's the all-Scottish pair of Hugh Jones and Sione Tuipulotu in the centre. Ben White starts at scrum half, Finn Smith at out half, a front row of Pierre Schoeman, Luke Cowan-Dickey and Will Stewart. The Irish pair of James Ryan and Tadhg Byrne in the second row. Henry Pollock at six, Jack Morgan returns to the side at seven and Ben Earl starts at number eight. Then on the bench, an all-Irish front row of Ronan Keller, Andrew Porter and Finlay Beelam. Scott Cummings and Josh van der Fleer are the forward replacements in the back five. And then Alex Mitchell, Marcus Smith and Owen Farrell himself making his first appearance of this Lions tour. He starts in the 23 shirt. Eddie, I suppose the thing most people would probably say, obviously everyone wants to be on a Lions tour, but if there's a game you probably don't want to be playing on a Lions tour, is the Saturday before the first test possibly it? Or the game before the first test possibly it?
No, I think the general opinion was the ACT game was the Lions test side and they were just, that was their dry run. And then did a good long run into the test game next week. First test game with no midweek game. That said, I would say that performance was pretty flat as well as like previous performances. So now I'm saying some of those guys that are in for the weekend will be, you know, licking their chops a bit to make a case. And there's a few of them there could make their case. I mean, I would say I'd be pretty amazed if Blair Kinghorn makes it. For that injury, it doesn't look at all promising. The fact that they haven't ruled him out and they haven't made a move is, I think, they have plenty of time in their hands. You know, whoever comes in is not going to start the test, so you're still like 10 days out of the first test, and then they have another week to the next test, so there's plenty of time to bring somebody in. And whoever you come in anyway is probably not going to be in the test shakeup. They're only going to fill a spot. For that reason, I think they're going to give Kinghorn as much time as they can, but I'd be very surprised if he's match fit for the first test. Those knee injuries, I mean, they're going for a scan, so it's not like, oh, we know exactly what's wrong and we're just going to, he'll rehab this and it'll be fine. They actually need doing a scan, or they scan everything nowadays. So, I mean, they scan your fingernail. But that said, I think looking at the injury, the way he reacted to it, the way he came off the field, you know, it doesn't look good. Now, I'm not saying he's out for a long time, but I just think the clock's against him for the first test. And if he's fit for the second test, they probably won't bring in a replacement. So if it's a 2-week injury, he'll be okay, but he would miss the first test. I'd be surprised if he makes it. On that basis, I think Hugh O'Keenan's nailed in. I can't see him go to Marcus Smith. Marcus Smith's been exposed at fullback, and to be fair to Marcus Smith, he's not a fullback. I just surprised a bit that they actually have played him there so much.
Particularly, sorry to butt in there, but like particularly the persistence of playing Marcus Smith at fullback when we've seen Mac Hansen play fullback quite a bit, like wing is obviously his best position, but he's rarely looked exposed or out of place in the backfield there.
Yeah, I mean at the same time, Elliot Daly was probably the other fullback. The three fullbacks were Daly, you know, Hugo Keenan, and Blair Kinghorn, and also then I would have thought Mac Hansen would be probably the next man up. So they seem to have this idea in their head, or Andy Farrell did, that maybe they could turn Marcus Smith into a fullback on the tour. you know, that let's give him plenty of time to play there and then see what happens, because he could be like a secret weapon at full back. Because to be fair, he's very, very good in broken play. That's kind of, if he gets space, he's absolutely lethal. But the problem with full back is that's just one small aspect of your game. There's, you know, the high ball, which he's vulnerable under. There's backfield position, where we saw yesterday he was way too narrow for one of the Brumbies' tries. And then there's defensively, you know, he's a game tackler, but he gets run over a bit, you know. Like, it's, I just thought it was a funny experiment. They gave him a lot of reps there, but I think there's no way they can be comfortable enough to think that he could start a test game there. And the problem is, even putting him on the bench, like, you put somebody on the bench, you have, they think they've got to be able to start a test, because it's a minute in, you're in, that's it, you're in the first minute, so you've still an 80-minute test game in front of you. So I don't know. I think Keenan is nailed in. I'd be shocked if there's any other option there, you know.
Yeah, and the fact that Marcus Smith is wearing 22 tomorrow and Owen Farrell is there in number 23 would possibly suggest if Marcus Smith is coming on Saturday in Adelaide, it's probably going to be in the backfield again. In line with that then, does we you kind of listed out the small list of options that are available at fullback now at the moment if Kinghorn's missing time. Pretty much Keenan, Marcus Smith, who we've just covered there, and Matt Canson. Is this where there's a bit of pressure building now on Andy Farrell, having called up Owen last week to replace Elliot Daly, where, you know, as good a player as Owen Farrell is, and there are justifiable reasons for calling him up, if Andy Farrell had kind of tried to swap like for like with Elliot Daly missing out, he might kind of be scrambling around at the moment for someone for 15.
Yeah, I think bringing Owen Farrell in is basically an admission that he's lost confidence in Finn Smith and Marcus Smith at 10. That he knows that his Finn Russell is his starting 10, but I think he went out with the idea that his pecking order would have been Finn Russell, then Finn Smith, and then Marcus Smith, right? And I think he's found that Finn Smith probably isn't up to that level yet. You know, if you think Finn Smith has been had a meteoric rise into the English team, I mean, he made his statement performances down the Champions Cup in Thomond Park, you know, against Munster, and that he's had some big performances. He's done well with England, so he was on a pretty steep learning curve. But I think he struggled a bit. And with the Lions, and I think now Farrell is thinking, I'm not sure his tests. And he was kind of in a bit of a quandary. And then what happened is, you know, Elliot Daly gets hurt and he sees an opportunity. Like, there's no doubt that Owen Farrell is hugely experienced. He won't bat an eyelid going into a Lions test. And he can play him at cover the midfield in terms of playing 10 or 12. So he saw an opportunity that with Elliot Daly out, like, I'm not going to bring in another full back, because I already have enough full backs as it stands. But I do need cover at 10 in case. Because if anything happens to Finn Russell, I think they're in massive trouble without someone like Owen Farrell to step in. So I think that was a calibration he made. And it's ironic that it was on the back of an injury, you know. I think if you remember the World Cup, South African situation, you know, the fly half that came in,
Pollard.
Pollard came in, he was sitting at home watching the World Cup in South Africa, and an injury at hooker, and Razzie goes, "Oh my God, I need an out half. Manny Lubbock isn't playing that well. I'm in trouble here." So he swaps a 10 for a hooker, and it worked out pretty well, you know. I think that might be a very similar parallel here, you know, that, like, he didn't pick Owen off the bat because I think he thought he had, like, enough in Finn Smith and Marcus Smith. Now, I don't know if Marcus Smith was ever in the frame here for 10, because he's played more full back than Anton, you know what I mean? So I think he thought that was his pecking order, Finn Russell, Finn Smith. But I think Finn Smith, to be fair, hasn't really kind of convinced Andy that he's, like, test, like, what, starting the first test. Finn Smith, that would be like, if there's a situation tomorrow where Finn Russell got sick even the night before the test, just say, like, the worst case scenario, he comes down with food poisoning or he's a bug or something, and you've got to find your out half. I think Owen Farrell will be straight in there, no question. And I that makes sense. You think about it. You know, his experience, his leadership as well. He's a very strong character. And again, you know, someone like Finn Smith, who's very green behind the ears at Test Rugby, to go in there, is he going to boss around guys in the midfield who are like way more experienced than him? Like, certainly Owen Farrell is going to tell you where to get on and off your bike if he's at 10. You know, if fellas are demanding the ball, someone like Finn Smith will give it to him because they ask for it. As Owen Farrell says, shut up and get on there. I'll tell you when you get it. You know, that kind of leadership on the field under pressure. So I think that's my take on it a bit, you know, that there has been that shift in his thinking around the 10. And the opportunity arose to bring in someone who's way more experienced than the players he has, if that hadn't happened to Finn Russell. So it's fortuitous maybe in some ways for him, you know, that Elliot Daly got injured. Because if Elliot Daly hadn't got injured, Owen Farrell would be sitting on his couch back in England watching it, you know.
Are we, like, we're obviously assuming Finn Russell is starting the first test next week.
Oh, yeah.
What would be your expectation levels that Owen Farrell will be in a matchday squad next week in Brisbane?
Well, I think he's probably nailed in.
You do, yeah.
I do. I actually do. I think he will be on the bench again in the first test. And here's the other thing. Like, if everything was going swimmingly well, if the Lions were playing like a well-oiled machine and they were ploughing through the provincial teams and racking up, you know, buckets of scores and playing with the pizzazz and confidence, he might feel, yeah, I think we're okay, you know. But I think they're very brittle at the moment. They're not, this camp's not in a good place. I mean, I don't think there's any dissent in the camp, but I'm not suggesting there's anything in the background where players are pushing back and there's a bit of turmoil going on. I don't believe that at all. So I want to put that on the table in case anyone accuses me of saying that. But I will say that they're a very nervous group. This team are not playing with the level of intensity and execution that they need to play in a test game. And I think they know that they're below par. I mean, again, watching the coverage yesterday, there's a couple of things on the TV coverage on Sky that I noticed. One would have been, like, Sky want this tour to be a big success. It's a Lions tour. They've invested heavily in it. And they're trying to be as positive as they can about the whole thing. Like, every time something good happens, it's starting to
Ron Nogara hasn't got the memo, though.
No, but Raj never works on memos anyway. I knew that for a long time. But, I mean, like, it's so positive. Like, yeah, that's beginning to come together. But the truth is, when they talk about it after, to be fair, and you hear the other pundits are saying, you know, things aren't really right here. We're not finishing teams off, you know. The dominance they had yesterday on the possession and territory and didn't convert on the scoreboard. The mistakes they're making in defence, they're getting in trouble at the breakdown. Their set piece is dominant, which is very dependent on at the moment. And if the set piece and the test isn't as dominant, they won't get the same opportunities. You know, there's lots of dark clouds in the horizon here. Now, I have to say this because you can't avoid it, is that what might save the tour in terms of their outcome is they're playing Australia. Like, look at it this way. If they were heading into Dunedin for the first test next week, or onto the High Veld in Bloemfontein, there'd be a fair bit of panic around the camp now, I can tell you, because they're not delivering. I mean, some of the teams they've played, well, you know, those provincial teams they're playing are nowhere near test level. And you saw the games where they racked up 50 points. All the action happened in the last 20, 30 minutes when they ran the bench and the other team had no bench. Like, one of the guys came off the bench yesterday for the SET Brumbies. Plays his club rugby in the US, in the MLR. And he was flown in to fill a spot. No. That guy got his debut off the bench. So they're going out to try and, shore up the onslaught from... And he's running test players off the bench to come at them, you know. So, like, they should be polishing these teams off, like, just putting them to the sword, and they're not. So that's... That nervousness creeps in now. No, it's Australia. Like, so... If I was in Dunedin next week or Bloemfontein, I'd be very, very nervous because the way they're playing at the moment would not win test games in those countries. But the fact's Australia. Like, Australia should have lost to Fiji last week. They had that bizarre intervention by the TMO where Australia counterattacked, turned the ball over, Fiji scored to make it a two-score game, probably unassailable lead where it was, And the TMO interjected and said, "Oh, the Australian player his foot on touch," so the try was taken away from Fiji because the Australians had put his foot in touch. That changed the game. They fell over the line with a late try. They won 21-18. So like Australia are not in a good place. It's a
And
very
their out half is injured now as well.
unless the other
Nolo
one was going to
Laseo.
say Nolo Laseo is a goner. Like they've no backup, and they're ranked 8 in the world. Like Andy Farrell is picking from four teams, three of them are ranked well above Australia in the world. So, like, they can still win the series here, but you can't say that this Lions team is firing on all cylinders. Like, it's really a well-oiled machine, and it's spluttering in a lot of places, which probably won't make a difference. I still think that when they still win the series, they probably like they should win a 3-0, but maybe. What could help the tour is if they lost the first test, and then everyone might get more interested in it. It's hard to watch at the moment. It's not compelling rugby, like no matter
Yeah.
what you say about it. It's not like I can't miss this game. I better make sure I see this game.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see what sort of a fight Australia can put up in that first test. Because as I say, if Australia can win a first test, that puts a whole new level of life into the 2 weeks that follows. Just from a general
Sure.
interest point of view, obviously rugby union is in a massive fight for hearts and minds in Australia. Lions
Which
against
is
Brumbies
losing,
obviously would have been complete
but
second best to the state of origin
yeah,
yesterday afternoon.
but it's losing the fight. Let's be
Yeah.
honest, it's losing the fight. I mean, I was surprised that they put the game on parallel with the state of origin, because
Well,
like,
like I was reading into it, and it was very much the NRL who put their game up again. You know, the Lions fixtures had been announced for 2 years, and the state of origin. Or the organizers, or whatever way that's organized, is it NRL who organizes it, I don't know. But essentially, they saw that and were like, no, we're happy to take that on. You know?
well, they're going to do what they're going to do. They're
Exactly, yeah.
holding
They
all the
knew they
cards.
knew they know they're gonna win that fight, essentially.
Yeah, it's a knife or gunfight in Australia
Yeah.
because I saw a clip on social media there where somebody was paging through the sports pages. It would have been the week before last, now to be fair, but you had to get to page 13 of the sports pages to see anything about the Lions,
Right.
and it was a pretty puff piece on the Lions. It was actually to do with one of the Australian players. Like it wasn't even anything gritty or interesting. It was just a puff piece on one of the Australian players who was going to be playing against the Lions. Page 13 of the sports pages. So like, and again, the word's come back that the Lions aren't really going out of their way to engage with the Australian public. You know, they're pretty much. The media is fairly limited. They're holed up in hotels. No, they're traveling a lot, to be fair, but
Yeah.
they're not gonna. They're the only way that this gathers momentum, probably, ironically, is that if Australia win the first test, then maybe it lights a torch in Australia and people kind of interested in it. That said, it would cause a fair bit of panic in the Lions camp, but I just still think they can win this 3-0. Like, I mean, if Ireland had three tests against Australia in the next few weeks, just Ireland, we'd be pretty bolshy we could get the job done. You know, so the Lions should be able to get this job done. And I say, like, we have to put in context that this is Australia, who are at a low ebb in their history of rugby, that they're playing against. It's nothing like the previous Lions tours to Australia, to be fair, or nothing like back in 99 in the 90s when Australia were like cock-a-hoop with rugby. They were one of the top teams in the world. So even if they get it done, and they're not firing on all cylinders. That's the worrying thing. So they could get caught, and if they get caught in the first test, then there's no room for error. Like if they lost this test series, it would be worse than 2005. Remember when the Lions got wiped out in 2005, and I was there. At least we were playing in New Zealand. Like that was the,
Yeah.
and that New Zealand team like were just at that point they were the best team in the world without any
Yeah,
doubt.
if there was a World Cup in 2005, New
Oh.
Zealand would have walked it.
Walked it. They would have walked it. They came to Dublin that no, they came to Europe that November, and they just whipped everybody. So like, that's the context of it. So now the Lions are nervous and edgy against a team that, you know, they should beat. England should beat them. Wales or Ireland should beat them. Wales could probably beat, or we'll struggle, but Scotland could beat them. So it's there's a lot of pressure building on this tour now. And I don't think I was watching with the body language of the coaches in the coaches box. It's pretty. Grim, and I—that's the hot seat. I've been there myself, I know, and it's a pressure place. So even, in any game, you're under pressure. But you can tell there's a furrowed brows, and guys are pretty t tense in there, and there's snappy communication going on. So it's, and I think Andy Farrell yesterday after the game, he talked about the positives in the first half and how they got some width on the game. But that's because they were winning collisions, and they were basically getting lots of time and space on the ball, and Finn Russell was pulling the strings. And that's actually another worry for them, is Finn Russell's got an armchair ride in every game, and he's delivered, which he does. He's that kind of player. You give him the front foot, give him an extra yard of space, an extra couple of seconds on the ball, he's a magician. But we've seen Finn Russell before, when he's under the cosh, do some funny things. So I'd be shocked if Joe Schmidt hasn't got a plan to put pressure on Russell, because if Russell has a bad game, Russell wobbles, the team are in big trouble, and that's the first pressure point. I think the Australians have been very hard pushed to put pressure on the Lions at set piece time. The two areas I think that Joe Schmidt will definitely target will be Finn Russell as the playmaker, and I don't mean that they're going to target him in a bad way. They'll put extra pressure on him. They might send individual shooters out of the line onto him or something like that, just to spook him. And the others, they're going to go after the breakdown, because the Lions have struggled at the breakdown.
That was one I wanted to bring up, because I think yesterday was the breakdowns, but it's been a fairly benign area for the first few games of the tour. But I think yesterday you really saw what happened when the Brumbies turned it into a complete mess. Now, I'd say the message is Andy Farrell will be kind of trying to highlight as many instances of people lying over balls or slowing things down as possible. But we did get the first real glimpse of what happens if you do your best to slow that ball down. Not even just like they won a handful of jackal penalties or turnovers, but there was also just those kind of that double hit to just kind of give a player a little nudge as Gibson Park is trying to pull the ball out, just slowing things up, making it a little bit messy. And Australia did it very, very well to Ireland back in November. It was probably the main reason they stayed in that game so long and could nearly have won it on a different day. It was very interesting to see that yesterday, the first time a team really, really went after it.
Well, there's a few aspects to the breakdown that's problematic for the Lions. I think one is the referees have been told now to leave more of a contest at the breakdown, right? You know what I mean? That guys are being much more aggressive, because even if you don't win the ruck, if you even don't poach it, you don't steal it, you're not getting a turnover. If you keep smacking the ruck, you can slow it down from like a 2 second ruck to a 4 second ruck. And the difference between a 2 second ruck and a 4 second ruck is night and day. 4 second ruck, you've got your defenders in the right positions, properly spaced and getting off the line. If you have a 2 second ruck or less, you don't get that defensive shape, and then you're scrambling. And that's what we saw for some of the Lions plays, which Andy Farrell referenced in the first half. Now, they got quick ruck ball, but the reason they got that is they were winning collisions. And this is the problem that the teams playing the Lions have had. This is where the wheels have come off in the last half an hour for a lot of the teams, is that, when the Lions get that quick, it's the same for every team. It's just the way rugby's built. If you get quick ruck ball, the defensive line can't get set. It gets too narrow. The attacking team gets time and space, and then there's holes over the place. The others, they want to be skinned out wide or the guts, So that's where the ruck is at the moment. Now, what the Brumbies managed to do yesterday is they stayed in the fight at the breakdown. Like, all through the game, they kept, and they really put their bodies in line. The danger with that, of course, is if you put too many guys into defensive ruck and the ball comes out quickly, you're in big trouble. But they took a risk, and on a balance, it paid off. The penalty count in the first half of games was getting a bit high as well. They were chasing, losing rucks, and they were getting over the football and off their feet and stuff. But on a balance, I think Stephen Larkham will be happy that they paid a little bit of a price in terms of penalties, but on a balance, they did more disruption, and they got more of a mess. And then the Lions had slow ruck ball. So no question that Australia are going to come at the ruck. They're going to come knocking at the ruck. The other thing is, though, that's a few times when the Lions have turned over the ball, like complete, holding on at the ruck, completely turned over, penalty to the opposition. The support players around the football have reacted very slowly, or got on a bad line of support. And this, I suppose, can happen when you put, this is one of the areas of the game you really have to focus on when you put a Lions team together, or you bring a combination team together, because they haven't played with each other an awful lot. The back rows are haven't played together a lot. So that's just a fact of life, and it's maybe something that they thought they could get solved quicker. But it, there still does big turnovers. The Brumbies got a couple of big ones yesterday at key moments by guys just getting in over the football, and the lines were slow to the breakdown. Guys took a different line in, or they were a half step too late. It's the old story, like half step too late at that level, and it's a poach and it's a penalty. So the breakdown is going to be, I mean, it depends how the referee manages it. So if the referee comes in and plays a tidy, really tidy game at the breakdown, he just manages the defense, like anyone's in there, get out of there, you know, get your hands away, and he lets the Lions get a quick ball, I think Australia will struggle. But if Australia can turn that into a barroom brawl at the breakdown and not give away a bucket of penalties, if the ref lets them contest, then I think the Lions could have their hands full at the breakdown. And the other one I think they'll definitely go after will be Finn Russell, because if Russell gets an armchair ride, I just think that he's just too good in that time and space continuum. We'll just pick the he'll pick the Wallabies apart. So that they're the kind of areas off the bat. Then, of course, Joe Schmidt's going to come up with a few players that they haven't seen before, you
He'll
know.
have a couple of lovely strike plays up his sleeve, like
Yeah, he
always,
will, of
won't he?
course. Yeah, of
Yeah.
course he will. And the
Yeah.
Lions should have the same. You see, this is not rocket science. I mean, this is what you do as a coach. You sit down, you look at the opposition, you find their weaknesses, you set them up, and you exploit the weakness. Like, every coach should be doing that. Your opposition gives you your game plan effectively, and I've always done that. But Joe Schmidt is particularly good, and always was, at that sort of granular analysis where he picks out someone turns a shoulder at the wrong time, and you can pick them off. But yeah, so he'll have some of that up his sleeve as well. And then, of course, there's the overarching thing. You never know that someone puts in a high shot accidentally. Someone comes off his left foot, guy's gone off his right foot, heads collide. The guy without the ball gets a red card. The guy with the ball gets to play on. It's like if you have the ball now, you have every right. No one, like you, they can, like you can't get penalised with the ball unless you stick your elbow into somebody's face before they arrive. So everyone tackling now, and that's for both sides. It's the same for everybody. But I'm just saying, let's say the Lions pick up a red card in the first 10 minutes of the first test, or play them a 40 minute. They're all the things that keep you awake at night, because you have absolutely no control over it.
Yeah.
Zero control, you know.
On the selection spots that are up for grabs then. Front row, we'll kind of go through it, I suppose, line by line. Front row, yesterday's front row was Ellis Genge, Dan Sheehan, Tadhg Furlong. Are you pretty confident that's the three that's going to start next weekend? All three seems to move pretty well. Scrum went well. Tadhg Furlong is actually looking pretty sharp.
Furlong's
Pretty,
good. Furlong's a
yeah.
lock. Sheehan's a lock.
And is it,
Again,
well, I suppose with Genge or Porter, is it very much a you can pick whichever one you
well,
want. You're
seeing
probably gonna get like, I don't think you can miss with your selection there, to be totally honest.
Genge has got that extra half step of pace in
Yeah.
Broken Field. You know, he had a couple of big rumbles, but he's a bit of a penalty machine. They were on the front foot yesterday, and he went like what, 2 meters beyond the ruck to clean somebody out, and he got penalised. Like he's,
I will point out though, people will be probably screaming in the comments for in the interest of balance. Andrew Porter's a pe penalty machine as well a lot of the time.
that's my point. Is that that's where the that's where the second part of my point was. That's where the discussion comes, you know. And I think Genge edges it at the moment because he's a little more dynamic. His scrummaging is good, but I think they would be having to sit down with him, saying, you know, you've got to tidy up, you know, your penalty stuff. But I think Genge makes the, now let's say Porter goes out and lights it up on the weekend, there's maybe there's a discussion. But I think the front row as it was is probably going to be as it is, unless there's a change of mind. But the only change of mind could be around Lucet. I don't see that in a hooker or tight.
Yeah, second row then Itoje and Joe McCarthy.
Yeah, Itoje is a lock. I think he's playing back to his best rugby for a long time. He's been a huge presence. He's obviously leadership skills are coming through. His line-out work is phenomenal. So I think I mean, he's playing better now than he has with England for a while, which is like fair credit to the guy. I think McCarthy has played his way in, because I think he's always going to be the, as long as he's doing what he does, which is that huge work rate, the massive physicality on both sides of the football. I talked about this a few weeks ago and saying, like, when he there was heads kind of turned when he got picked early on the tour, And I was saying, well, I think Farrell is going to look at him and say, like, no, go up and make your mark here and play your way in. And he has done that. Like, his work rate's phenomenal. His carrying, his tackling, like he, and then he threw a really sweet pass yesterday for one of the tries, you know. So I think he probably gets it, although the lineout's been firing well, so I don't see him trading a lineout jumper for him. But
Yeah.
there's probably a bit of a discussion around that. The
But I
back row
suppose
is interesting.
on the line out jumper issue, it is looking like you're going to have an Ollie Chessum or a Tadhg Byrne at number six. So that is the, you know, that is a your other line out option there as well.
I mean, he's still a good jumper, but he's not your
Yeah.
classic leaper, you know, he's not your salmon in the air stuff. But you
Is
do.
the big is the big back row selection at number seven?
Yeah, I think there's a discussion to be had there. Although I think Curry's work rate is phenomenal. You know, he just again he's a workhorse. It could be a discussion around the breakdown that they may need a Van der Flier at open side. You know, or even Tadhg Byrne. They want the trade here is they feel I think that physically they can bully Australia. Right? So one of the signs of going to bully mode is you pick a big back row. So now you're back five, everyone's able to carry, everyone's able to hit. The danger with that is if you put someone at seven who's not good over the football, you know, or you need that guy around the field who's going to get poachers in, who's going to seal off on the offense. Like Van der Flier is a machine like that, you know, he's a superb player. So I don't think the seven is locked and loaded. I think Curry's
Who's
probably has the edge.
leading the race, Curry?
I think Curry, it depends on where they're going. If they're worried about the breakdown, they may pivot in the back row. They technically, because if you're talking about making sure the function of the ruck, they could possibly go with Tadhg Byrne and Van der Flier. You know, and all it could be an all Irish back row because if they feel the ruck's going to be a point of concern. But if they go, well, no, we're going to be fine at the ruck. Let's go and batter these Australians to submission. Then you're going with Chisholm and you're going with Curry, you know. They're the kind of discussions they're going to have. I think the back row is a little bit more open than people might think. But there's treading through all this, you know, treading across all these selections is if Andy Farrell ends up with 10 or 11 Irish guys on the team, they cannot lose. If they
Yeah.
lose with 10 or 11 Irish guys, he will get eviscerated. On both, he'll get eviscerated in Australia for skits and giggles, but he'll get eviscerated by the British press because this is a very heavy Irish like Lions tour, and not just talking about number of players. Practically the whole staff is Irish. There's only two guys on the staff on the rugby and things that are not Irish, so it becomes a green tour if he does that. And then if they lose the first test with 10 or 11 Irish guys, like it'll be chaos, I'd say. You know, that's the risk he's got here. He might think his best team against Australia is 10 or 11 Irish guys who he knows really well, who he can trust, who he knows he'll go to the well from, who like in the way they'll go. Not that the other guys won't go to the well, but he knows what he's going to get out of them exactly. They're familiar with his thinking, they're familiar with his rugby philosophy. But if he pulls the trigger on that, he's going to have to deliver big time. Have to. That's what's going to be in the back of his mind, you know. Like you can't get away from that, and that's another dimension to it that you don't have when you're picking a national team. You don't have that dimension with a national team.
I'll move it on. Last point on the Lions, and then we'll quickly talk about Ireland. The centre partnership is probably the other area that's really open for discussion because I kind of think all four of Aki, Ringrose, Tuipulotu, and Jones have done pretty well so far. I think in particular at 13, whoever misses out between Ringrose and Hugh Jones is going to feel like one very, very unlucky player because the two of them have been absolutely outstanding. What way do you see that one falling? Is it still likely to be Aki and Ringrose?
I think so. I do actually. I think it's. I think Aki's edged it out against Tuipulotu. I think Ringrose probably was the pick of the crop yesterday. He looked really classy. He's
And I
got
think,
that.
and to give, I want to give Ringrose credit because I think coming into the tour, he was probably a player who was under a little bit of pressure.
Oh, it
I, th
was
I think I think
because,
most of the people were that there was so much discussion about Hugh Jones and how impressive he was that there probably was a bit of pressure on Ringrose to deliver. And in fairness to him, he's taken his chances brilliantly.
well, I just think he's had his form this year has been a little off, but he's been injured. It's very hard, like, to get 100% to your form. Like, but they say form is temporary, class is permanent. Like, Ringrose's a classy player. You know, he's really talented. He's phenomenally good at going forward. He finds seams between defenders all the time. He always goes over the gain line. It's very hard to make the first tackle on him when he's on his form. And I think he's delivered his form again. The tricky thing here again is, like, going back to the, you could have an all Scottish midfield, but I don't think so. You could have, I think it's looking like Farrell and two Irish midfielders, you know. It's not impossible he wouldn't put Jones. If Jones has a barn burner on the weekend, then I think it's a live discussion. But at the moment, I would say, based on the ACT Brumby selection, they're leaning into Ringrose, and he didn't disappoint. He played really well. I think he was kind of one of the standout guys in the game. So for that reason, I do think the midfield looks to me like it's going to be Russell, Aki, and Ringrose. But
Yeah,
you know,
and
the
I
other
think in
side.
and I think in fairness, anyone who comes onto any podcast can make a valid argument for any two of those four
Oh
centers
yeah, it could change, but
to start
if you're
next
reading
week.
the tea leaves, if you're reading the tea leaves, I'm not saying if I was there, this is the team I'd pick. When
Yeah.
you're talking about selections, you always have to say, people say, oh, you said I'm not saying I'd pick that team. I'm saying this is what I think Farrell will pick, because that's the indicators we're getting. Yeah, I think it's going to fall that way. But there is pressure on him that every Irish selection has been more than justifiable. That's my take.
That is our early thoughts on the Lions Test team. They're going to be taking on the a combined Australia and New Zealand 15 this Saturday in their final warm-up game. A decent team named by Les Kiss and Ian Foster actually for that. Got players like Sean Stevenson, Nani Laumape, David Havili, Marika Korabeti. Who else have we got? Brandon Payne-Gamosa, Jeffrey Tumanga-Allen, Pete Samu is in there, George Dyer. So yeah, quite a good team. That's going to be Saturday morning, 11 a.m. Irish
They have
time
nothing to
in
lose as
Adelaide,
well. They have nothing
and
to
they've
lose.
nothing to lose.
Just
Exactly.
throw the kitchen sink, you know.
It's the first time this combined team are playing since 1989 as well. So looking forward to that. Meanwhile, we'll move it on to Ireland because Paul O'Connell's made five changes to his team for Saturday's tour match against Portugal in Lisbon. Jack Crowley starts at out half, and there are three potential debuts in the matchday squad. Crowley comes in at out half to replace Sam Prendergast. He drops out of the matchday squad. Kieran Frawley makes his first appearance since November on the bench. There are two debuts in the starting team. Shane Bolton starts on the left wing in place of the luckless Jacob Stockdale, while Alex Kendallen makes his first Ireland appearance in the back row. Cian Prendergast is also in the starting side. So it is Jimmy O'Brien at fullback, Tommy O'Brien and Shane Bolton on the wings. Centres are retained Jamie Osborne and Stuart McCloskey. Craig Casey, captain again, Jack Crowley at out half. Front row unchanged, the Leinster trio, Jack Boyle, Gus McCarthy and Thomas Clarkson. Tom O'Hearn comes into the second row to replace Cormac Isichuku and partners Darren Murray. Ryan Baird stays in the back row. Alex Kendallen swaps in at seven for Nick Timoney. And Cian Prendergast, who it's going to be hopefully third time lucky for Cian Prendergast. He's missed out on two potential caps in the last few months, both with illness on the day. He gets a start on number eight. I might just start on Cian Prendergast, Eddie, because geez, the poor guy has been down on his luck in the last few months. Was in line to play last week against Georgia in Tbilisi and in the Six Nations against Wales in Cardiff. Both times had to withdraw on the day due to stomach bug issues. I'd say he's been eating rice cakes all week in Lisbon getting ready
Yeah,
for this.
I'd say he's going to be very careful about making sure. Like, it's tough, but it's great to get his chance, obviously. I mean, it's these opportunities, you know, like, you get these opportunities when you're on the fringe of the squad. He's not like a front liner. He's not always in every squad. And they slip away because of something totally out of control. It's hugely frustrating. So get his chance this weekend. Again, it all counts. Like, you know, these tests will be forgotten. Like, this Georgia Portuguese test will be forgotten very quickly. Those these you know summer tours, during the Lions tours don't even make a blip, really. People's rugby psyche, you know, it goes, it happens, it's over with, unless something bad happens, and there's no indication that's going to happen on this tour. But for the guys on the ground, this is your chance to make a statement that when the next selection is in the autumn, you know, for the autumn internationals, and you've got to pitch up for the, like, to get a chance to get in the door in Carlton House. Here's your chance this weekend in Portugal, you know, and that's there's no, like, there's no way you can miss the bus on that one, because you might sit inside a Carlton House again, you know. So there's a bit of pressure on them. I do think though that a couple of things I'd say is that the selections pretty much are, though, once the squad was named, those two test selections would have been written down, and they're going to stick with them, they bar injury. So Stockdale probably would have, might have played again, but Shane Bolton goes in. We don't know, but I would suspect that they pick those selections. I know that before they leave, and unless change, unless someone gets sick or whatever injured. The great thing on this tour is, I'd say it's a very happy tour because they've got the big one out of the way. Georgia was always going to be the tough one. In Tbilisi in the summer in terrible heat. I mean, and it's a
And
very,
it ended up being terrible rain in
yeah, as well,
the
which
end.
probably didn't help them, you know, because they would have
Yeah.
restricted their game. But the thing about it is, it's a very hostile environment, Tbilisi. Very hard place to go. I mean, I remember bringing the Eagles there in 2010 in November, played them in a soccer stadium. It was 45,000 at the match. Like, it was just insane. And I remember they beat us the last play of the game. We had a scrum 5 meters out, and we'd lost our number eight, and they drove us off the ball and scored in the court, scoring beside the post. But we nearly had him. I was about 6 minutes into injury time. There was no clock on the game, so it's a very tough place to go. So I thought it'd be a tighter game, actually. I thought that the way they won that game very comfortably, some great tries, looked like they were really in control of themselves, and that itself will give a huge boost to the tour and the lads on tour. I'd say all the mood comes up, and then they take a flight to Portugal, you know, and it's not going to be as tough a test, I don't believe. I think Portugal are a decent side, but I think they should get through this one again without too many problems if they stay in the zone. The thing about this sometimes is when you get a lift like that, guys maybe not as experienced at test rugby, they kind of feel, oh, it's going to be fine, and they're not as laser focused. It's not the same fear, and they get roughed up a bit, and then it's maybe it's a bit tougher, but that's all. I think Paul will be across that, like, you know, like, very tough. He'll be making sure nobody takes a second off mentally, you know. So I expect him to do well in this. It's, again, it's a very exciting team. I mean, it's good to see someone like Hugh Gavin is on the bench. You know, I know his dad Barry played with Black Rock and played with Connacht. He's Galwegian originally, but like, he's really stood out in the under-20s last year. He was
Yeah.
standout guy. You could see he was on his way up the food chain. But you know, get guys like that getting a shot. So these are really banana skins in some ways. You don't want to have a record you lost to Portugal, lost to Georgia. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the guys who are on the field giving themselves a shot. So when Andy Farrell looks at the video and there's analysed and it's broken down, then he's sitting down to pick the autumn test squad, which is like up to 40 something players that you're getting an invite to Carlton House, that you put yourself in with a shot. Because a lot of those positions are very competitive, you know. I mean, certainly the back five, again, as always, you know, in Irish rugby, it's there's so many guys fighting for their slot. And there's some possibilities in the backs as well. Like, Crawley's a chance to make a statement again if he gets off the bench. Of course, you know, when you're looking at it from the point of view of Craig Casey is going to make a statement again at nine, get back in, and Jack Crowley wants to, you know, put his hand up again. You know, he's behind Prendergast. It's his shot after Prendergast getting the start. Like, so there's a lot of small dynamics going on there, but they're all pretty much individual ones. They're all trying to make their statement, you know. So yeah, it'll be an interesting game, but it should be a game they should salt away fairly comfortably, particularly on the back of a very good win away in Tbilisi last week.
Yeah, it was actually the perfect kind of win for them in Georgia last week, because it wasn't a perfect performance by any stretch of the imagination, and Georgia did actually come and, you know, tried to have a go.
Oh yeah.
They ripped the backside out of them in the first half at the scrum. Georgia did, and you know, Ireland settled that down in the second half. So they faced some real challenges during it. They got off to a perfect start, then faded away a little bit, gave away a try before half time. that was a challenge, obviously, and that could have been the point where the game fell away from them. But come out, started the second half and really hit the ground running, got a try and never really looked back. So there's plenty to work on. It wasn't a perfect win.
Oh, no.
But there were enough positives in it. And I suppose the attitude was probably the attitude of a very young and inexperienced team is probably the thing that stands out. And heading into this week, then, I do want to mention before we finish up, Shane Bolton coming in for Jacob Stockdale. Obviously hugely frustrating for Stockdale, who was having a pretty good game up until the point where he got his shoulder injury last week. But Bolton's been someone who for the last year or 18 months hasn't had too many chances to impress because he's picked up a lot of injuries. But almost any time he's been on the pitch for Connacht has looked like a player with a point of difference. Big, powerful, fast, out on the left wing, and has scored a lot of tries and been really dangerous. It's going to be really interesting to see how he gets on Saturday, particularly with, you know, like James Lowe is still playing some excellent rugby, but long term, there, you know, you don't know how many more years Lowe has left. You do have to start thinking about options.
Well, yeah, these are young guys. These are the young guns coming up now that have to put up their hand and make a statement. You know, it's, I suppose probably the guy who could make the argument that he could be almost starting for Ireland is Tommy O'Brien, because he was outstanding at the back end of the season for Leinster. But the fact he was injured during the Six Nations, I think he probably would have forced his way into the discussion around the Six Nations.
Two tries in his first 7 minutes of international rugby last week.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, there's a few guys there that are right on the cusp of actually breaking in at some point into the team in the next year or so. And the World Cup is only 2 years out now. And this Irish team, do the math on this Irish team. It's not a young Irish team at the moment.
No.
A lot of guys are wrong side of the 3-0. Not there's nothing wrong with that, but there's guys getting up in age there. So this time 2 years, we'll be looking down the barrel of the World Cup. So Andy Farrell's got to start to make some sort of moves along. This team that's been pretty much locked together for the last couple of years and delivered in lots of ways. A lot of them are going to be on the cusp of the top of the hill, you know, in 2 years' time. So he's got to start finding ways. And this is all these guys know this. This is their chance, as I said, to get in the door in Carton House and then make an impression. And these chances, you may not get these chances again. So all the pressure's on the players. And I think the nature of the win in Tbilisi was excellent. And they would have known, Georgia put as much pride in their scrum as Argentina do. That's kind of what they're famous for. One of the second biggest sport in Georgia, I think, is apart from soccer, is wrestling. So they produce these phenomenal props. You know, wrestlers make great props because their body build and their strength and their ability to wrestle in the scrum. So they're a nightmare to scrummage against. So the fact that they were in trouble and they fixed that at half time and they got it back on track and they went and win the game like they did. Like, it was a very good win. I think people probably won't realise how good a win it was. I thought it'd be a lot tighter out there, to be fair. And then the weather didn't help them either, so, and the heat. So, yeah, but the guys now playing next weekend against Portugal are under pressure to deliver. I don't think it's going to be as tough a test unless they put themselves in a bad place. And then if they put themselves in a bad place, some guys are going to pay a price for that in terms of selection in the autumn.
Right, so that is Ireland against Portugal, kickoff 7 o'clock on Saturday evening in Lisbon. That's the same as Irish time, by the way. So 7 o'clock local and Irish time. Eddie, thanks a million for joining us. We'll be back for another podcast in the next week or so, and hopefully from Brisbane. I'll be heading out early next week. So touch wood, I make it out there safe and sound, and we'll speak to you from there next week.
Bring the sunscreen.